ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
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 ॐ नमो भगवते
वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम थर्ड कैंटो चैप्टर 14 टेक्स्ट 15। दिस चैप्टर इज एंटाइटल्ड एज प्रेगनेंसी ऑफ दीति इन द इवनिंग। टेक्स्ट 15। अथ मे कुरु कल्याणं कामं कमललोचन आर्तोपशर्पणम् आर्तोपशर्पणम् भूमन् अमोघम् हि महीयसि। अथ मे कुरु कल्याणम् कामं कमललोचन आर्तोपसर्पणं भूमन् अमोघं हि महीयसि। अथ मे कुरु कल्याणं कामं कमललोचन आर्तोपसर्पणं भूमन् अमोघं हि महीयसि। अथ मे कुरु कल्याणं कामं कमललोचन आर्तोपसर्पणं भूमन् अमोघं हि महीयसि। अथ देयरफॉर मे अंटु मी कुरु काइंडली डू कल्याणम बेनेडिक्शन कामं डिजायर कमललोचन ओ लोटस आईड वन आर्त ऑफ द डिस्ट्रेस्ड उपसर्पणम द अप्रोचिंग भूमन ओ ग्रेट वन अमोघम विदाउट फेलियर ही सर्टेनली महीयसि टू अ ग्रेट पर्सन। Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O lotus-eyed one, kindly bless me by fulfilling my desire. When someone is in distress approaches a great person, his pleas should never go in vain. Please repeat after me. O lotus-eyed one, kindly bless me, by fulfilling my desire. When someone in distress approaches a great person, his pleas should never go in vain. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is a very short purport. Diti knew well that her request might be rejected because of the untimely situation. But she pleaded that when there is an emergency or a distressful condition, there is no consideration of time or situation. So, Atha me kuru kalyanam kamam kamalalochana आर्तोपसर्पणं भूमन् अमोघं हि महीयसि। हाउ मेनी ऑफ यू मेमोराइज द वर्स ऑलरेडी? यू डिड से इट।
अथ मे कुरु कल्याणं कामं कमललोचन आर्तोपसर्पणं भूमन् अमोघं हि महीयसि।
वेरी गुड। व्हाट इज द पर्पस ऑफ रिपीटिंग द वर्सेस सो मेनी टाइम्स so that we can memorize. And what is the secret of memorizing the verses? The secret of memorizing the verses, first is repetition, second principle, remember the first word of each line, and the third principle, third one, write it in a piece of paper. The fourth principle, try to repeat it, try to see if you can remember it. And if you get stuck, then just look at the piece of paper that you are carrying. Are you following that? It looks like only someone is following. You're following? No, why did you shake your head? Kartik? I'm sorry, Krishnadas. What about you, Gaurdas? You're doing it? Try to do it. Won't it be nice to memorize the verses? Atho me kuru kalyanam kamam kamala lochana arto pasarpanam bhuman amogham hi mahiyasi. O lotus-eyed one, kindly bless me by fulfilling my desire. When someone in distress approaches a great person, his pleas should never go in vain. So who is making this plea? Diti. To whom?
Kashyapa.
At what time?
Evening.
In the evening. So she is, this is actually the prelude to the birth of Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha, the two great demons who appeared in the age of Satyuga. Who were Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha in reality, actually? Who they were? They were two gatekeepers of the Vaikuntha planet, Jai and Vijay. Jai and Vijay were cursed by the four Kumaras that they would fall down and take birth in the material world. And then the Lord came and pleaded on their behalf or apologized to the four Kumaras, Sanak, Sanatan, Sanandan and Sanat Kumar. Now, Kumar means those who are between Kumar. There are four stages of life. Kumar, Balla, Kumar, Jovan, and Prodatta or Bhartaka. These are the generally four. So, Kumar stage is from 5 to 10. Balla stage is from birth to the age of 5. Kumaram Acharet Pragya Dharman Bhagavatani. Who is saying that? Prahlad Maharaj. Kumaram Acharet Pragya. Pragya, the wise people, the wise one, those who are properly situated in knowledge, what they will do? They will practice this process of Bhagavatani, cultivating one's relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead from his childhood. How old was Prahlad Maharaj at that time? He was 5 years old. And how old was his friends? How old were his friends? They also were just about 5 of his age, 5-6 years old. And so he is advising that at this age, at an early stage of life, one should practice this process of cultivating the knowledge about the Supreme Personality of God. Kumara Acharit Pragya. So Kumaras, these four Kumaras, who are these four Kumars? The four Kumars are the first four sons of Brahma. They appeared from Brahma's mind, Manasaputra. The creation began through the first created being. And how did the first created being, Brahma, came? How did Brahma come? Brahma came directly from the navel of the Lord. There was a lotus. The Lord was lying in Garbha ocean, and from his navel there appeared a lotus, and Brahma found himself situated in that lotus, on that lotus. Then Brahma was instructed by the Lord from within his heart through Gayatri. By meditating on Gayatri, which was given by the Lord himself to Brahma by playing his flute, the transcendental knowledge, Divya Gyan, was revealed in the heart of Brahma. Divya Gyan Hride Prakashita. Tene Brahmarida Adikavaye Muihanti Yatsuraya. At the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, this has been established. That this transcendental knowledge, why it is called transcendental? What is the meaning of the word transcendental? Transcend means what?
Goes beyond.
Goes beyond. Transcend means beyond. And transcendental, that is beyond what? This material nature. Material nature, what is this material nature? Material nature is the reality that is perceived or by our senses, that we can perceive out with our senses. In this nature we can see things with our eyes, hear things with our ears, and so forth. We have five senses: eyes, ear, nose, touch and tongue. And there are five objects of the senses: Roop, Ras, Gandha, Shabda and Sparsha. The form we see with our eyes. Ras, taste, we experience through our tongue. Sound we experience through our ears. Touch we experience through our skin. And smell we experience through our nose. Five senses, five objects of the senses. And our experience in this material nature, or our perceptions in the material nature, our knowledge about this nature, is limited only to our senses. Now, if there is something beyond that, can we perceive that with our senses? If there is something that is beyond the perception of our senses, will we be able to know about that? With our senses, we won't be. By dint of our own effort, we won't be able to experience that. But if somebody comes and tells us about that, then we can know. So knowledge can be acquired in various ways. One is through direct perception. And another is indirect perception. And the indirect perception can stretch up to the limit of, ultimately it limits to Shruti, hearing. Hearing from whom? From bona fide sources. Bona fide sources means those who do not lie, in simple words. Those who do not lie, they are the bona fide source. Like, there is another reality existing beyond our sense perception, beyond our sight. That reality that exists beyond our sight, beyond our sense perception, how can you get to know about that? Only if somebody comes and tells us about that. Say, for example, many of us did not see America. Now, can we get to know about, do we know America, that America exists? There was a time when people didn't know. In India, or in Europe, people didn't know America existed. About 500 years ago, Columbus went and discovered America. Then Columbus came and told people about America. Actually, Columbus didn't speak about America. Columbus thought he found India. Actually, those days, India was the greatest nation. India was the most opulent country. That's why everybody wanted to go find the route to India. There was trade route with India. The Indian traders used to come, or people used to go also to India from Europe. Indian traders, actually those days Europe was totally uncivilized. Europe didn't have any money. Europe didn't have any prosperity. So they would do the trading with part of Middle East, part of Greece, and so these Indian traders used to come to Europe, to some places. But Europe was very keen to go to India, but it was difficult. Like for example, Marco Polo, you know Marco Polo? He went to India and he went to China. His thing was to find out a route to go to India. And he discovered. Now, does somebody want to go to an uncivilized, uncultured, prosperous country? No. So why they were so keen on coming to India? Because India was the richest country. But it was risky to go by the land route, because there were so many dangers. There were dacoits, there were wild animals, there were forests, there were deserts. It was very difficult to travel through the land. And at around that time, Copernicus claimed or proved that Earth is round. Prior to that, the Western world used to think that Earth is flat. But Copernicus discovered or found out that Earth is round. So this young man, very adventurous young man, Columbus, he was actually Portuguese. So he thought that if Earth is round, then on the west of the Earth, west of Europe, is ocean. Now if I travel westbound, then I'll come to India. Isn't it? Like Earth is round, so generally by land they're going this way. And if I go this way, then I'll come to India. So thinking that, he convinced the Queen of Spain, Isabella, to patronize him, to give him a ship, give him a man, and he'll find a way to India. And he ended up in a new land, and he thought that he reached India. And he thought that was the land that he thought was India was actually America. And that's why the Native Americans are called Indians, Red Indians. It's only later on that Amerigo Vespucci, he discovered that it was not actually India. It was another continent. It was not India. And after Amerigo Vespucci, that continent, new continent, was named as America. Anyway, so like people at some point did not know that there is a country called America. But then somebody found out that land and came and spoke about that land. And then people became aware, oh, there is a land called America. There is a country called America. And then they went there. When they went there, they saw that, yes, the country is there, and the country is like this or that and so forth. Now, if somebody came and lied about that country, will they get a real notion about that country, a real understanding of that country? No. So, bona fide source means who doesn't lie. Like he comes, he goes to America, sees America, and then comes and speaks the way America actually is. And that is how people get information. Now, adhokshaja, that is, at least America you can go to and you can see. But there is another world which is beyond this material nature altogether. You cannot see that reality with your eyes. You cannot touch that reality. Now, how do you get to know about that reality? By properly hearing from an authoritative source, a bona fide source, a source which is not lying. Now we can see that this knowledge, this information there about that world is coming from whom? The most exalted personalities. One of the most important qualities they have, all of them, is that they are sat. Sat means, the word sat means honest. They're honest. They don't lie. Sadhu, satan, prashangan, sat or sadhu means the same. They're honest. An honest man never lies. So, by receiving the knowledge from these kind of people, those who never lie. And now, who are the people who are actually giving? Like, they have been classified as Mahajans, the great personalities. Who are those great personalities? 12 personalities have been classified as great personalities or Mahajans. They are Swayambhu. Swayambhu means Lord Brahma. Narada, Narad Muni. Shambhu, Lord Shiva. Kapila, Kapil Dev. Kumara, the four Kumars, as I just mentioned. Manu, or Manus. Swayambhur, Narada, Sambhu, Kapila, Kumara, Manu, Prahlada, Janaka, Bhishma. Prahlad Maharaj, Janak Raj, the father of Sita Devi, and Bhishma Dev, the grandsire of the Kuru dynasty. Vaiyashaki, Bali Vaiyashakir Vayam. Bali Maharaj, although he is a demon, he is considered to be an authority. Same thing with Prahlad also, born in a demoniac family, but he is an authority. Vaiyashaki, Bali, Vayam. Then Vaiyashaki is the son of Vasudev. Who is that? Shukadev Goswami. And I. Who is that I here? Jamraj. So these are the 12 Mahajans. Dwadas. 12 exemplary personalities. Now, when you see that what they are speaking, their exemplary descriptions, we can get to know the identity of the spiritual reality and the supreme personality of Godhead. Sometimes it's difficult, even when the Lord comes, it becomes difficult to recognize Him. Like, there are people who saw the Lord face to face, saw Krishna face to face, but could not recognize Him. Rather, they became antagonistic to Him. Like Shishupal and Dantavakra. Shishupal was very, very offensive to Krishna. Whenever he would see Krishna, he would just start blaspheming. And that reached its epitome, climax, when Shishupal, when Yudhishthira Maharaj was performing the Rajasuya Yajna. And after performing the Rajasuya Yajna, it was a consideration who would be who should be recognized as the greatest personality in the assembly, and he should be given that honor. And it was decided that Krishna should be that person. Then Shishupal and his allies, his accomplices, became very, very upset. Their thing was, they were already opposed to Krishna, inimical to Krishna. Their thing was, why this person? There are so many exalted personalities in this assembly, and you don't recognize them, but you are just recognizing this person. And he started to blaspheme him, saying that, look at him. First of all, we don't know what is his gotra. We don't know whether he is a Vaishya or a Kshatriya. He may be a Kshatriya, may be the son of Vasudev, but he was brought up by the Vaishyas. So his name, his characteristics are more like a Vaishya. He is not a pure Kshatriya. The Kshatriyas are very proud that way. So we don't know what is his birth. I mean, indirectly he was actually telling, the Lord is neither a Brahman or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya, he is the Lord. Then he was telling that we don't know what about his birth also, whose son he is. So that's also, whose son is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To indirectly, Shishupal was glorifying him. Anyway, this is a wonderful arrangement of the divine, arrangement of Yoga Maya. So then, and he said, and see, even when he was being brought up in the Vaishya community, he developed so many bad qualities. He was stealing from his childhood. He was stealing milk, and he stealing butter, he was stealing this, he was stealing that, and he developed a bad habit of stealing. So wherever he goes, he steals. And then he started to steal the young women. And he started to have affairs with all these young women in Braja. What kind of a person he is? So in this way he was blaspheming Krishna. At that time Bhishma stood up. Bhishma said that the whole world knows me for my vow of celibacy. I am recognized as a celibate. That means I never think of a woman. What to speak of a womanizer? Now, I worship Krishna. Because Krishna is the greatest brahmachari. You are saying that Krishna is this and Krishna is that. But I am recognized as a brahmachari. And as a brahmachari, the object of my worship is this Krishna. Why? Because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can do anything. In this pastimes, he is dancing with 16,000 young unmarried young girls. But in his Ramchandra pastimes, he did not even he didn't have more than one wife. He had just stuck to one wife. And even when somebody expressed some doubt about her, he was prepared to banish her. So that is the inconceivable pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The same personality. In one pastimes he acts in a certain way, in another pastimes he acts in another way. So in this way, those who are aware of the actual identity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they only know Him, and it is through them we can get to know Him. Those personalities are known as Mahajan. In the recent past also we saw so many greats, like we saw Prabhupada. At least in our eyes, with our eyes, I have seen, like, here is a personality who is undoubtedly the greatest personality, at least that I have ever seen. Like, he was extremely straightforward. There was no reason for him to lie about anything. On the other hand, I have seen there were so many people, scientists, scholars, atheists, got into debate with Srila Prabhupada. They were very aggressive towards Prabhupada. Why you are doing this? Why you are doing that? But no one could defeat Srila Prabhupada. Big, big scholars, big scientists all over the world. We could say at the end, they all have to accept their defeat. Now, in the previous ages, people are honest. In the sense, when they became defeated, they accepted the defeat and submitted to the person. Okay, you know better than me, so I will learn from you. That was actually the condition, or that was the standard. Like when there was a debate, whoever lost the debate on this topic of spiritual subject, they accepted, well, you know more than me, that's why I got defeated. So please give me the understanding. And anyway, nowadays people don't do that. If they did that, then many Nobel laureates would have been sitting here today. Like, they would have, meaning they would have accepted Srila Prabhupada's authority. At that time, Prabhupada had 10,000, more than 10,000 followers. And they all were non-Indians, practically. We were just a handful of Indians who were in ISKCON at that time. Just a few. And in India, people did not recognize the ISKCON movement at that time. And Prabhupada had 10,000 followers, and Prabhupada attracted those individuals. Why? Because they were seeker of truth. They never had any inclination towards Indian religion. Many young boys and girls at that time were attracted to India, but not for the pure religious or spiritual knowledge, but they were attracted to India because of, they were attracted to the drugs, and drugs means intoxicants, ganja, hashish. They used to come to smoke because it was readily available in Benares, Goa. So they were the places where they used to hang out, hundreds of them, thousands of them. And all the cities also used to see. But they were not interested in spiritual life. But when they came in contact with Srila Prabhupada, what happened? Many of them, who were addicted to all those intoxicants and a very sort of sinful kind of life, by coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada, they gave up their bad habits. What to speak of hashish and marijuana, what to speak of charas and ganja. They even gave up drinking tea and coffee. Because tea and coffee also certain degree of intoxicants in them, caffeine and tannin. They gave up all kinds of non-vegetarian eating habits. They became pure vegetarian, they gave up intoxication, they gave up illicit immoral relationship, and they gave up gambling. So these are the four standards, four restrictions that we have in ISKCON. That whoever joins ISKCON must follow these four regulative principles. Now consider, even in India, how many people are following this principle? But due to Prabhupada's influence, thousands of Americans and Europeans who were actually brought up with meat and alcohol and other intoxicants, they gave them up completely. Whose life was based on, centered around sex life, they all became complete celibates, brahmacharis. So that was the influence of Srila Prabhupada. Now obviously, Srila Prabhupada did not have any other intention but to uplift them onto the spiritual platform. That's why they responded so favorably. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make is that by seeing the person, we can recognize whether he is trustworthy or not. That's why it's very important that those who are carrying this message, those who are practicing this process, must be very, very exemplary in their characters. Can you trust a drunkard? Can you trust a meat eater? Actually, in reality, meat eater, probably people don't see it so badly nowadays. But in actual India, like, that was a very undesirable act. Like, especially in this part of India, wherever the Indian culture, Vedic culture, is properly practiced, especially the higher class of people, the brahmanas, they're all vegetarians. In South India also, they're vegetarians. In North India also we find. But now the world is changing. But say 50, 60 years back, it was understood. A high class person, especially the brahmanas, those who are into practicing spiritual process, they should be pure vegetarian, they should not take any intoxication, and so forth. So by this we can understand, that's why Prabhupada made this standard, that those who are going to join ISKCON, the spiritual movement, they must follow this process of purity. No intoxication, no meat eating, no gambling, and no illicit sex. Now if a person, on the other hand, we can see, like, who are untrustworthy? People, those who don't have an upright character, they are untrustworthy. They cannot trust them. So that's why when the information comes from the people, those who don't have any other ulterior motive or dubious intention, we can trust them. Why they should lie? And especially when we see this knowledge is coming in an unbroken chain of disciplic succession. It's a series of individuals who are extremely exemplary in their character. As I was saying, like, Prabhupada was, at least we saw how Prabhupada was. And similarly, we have to be exemplary by our behavior, by our nature. Like, say, for example, if the people, those who are around us, if they see that we are lying, will they trust us? And so he lies. So maybe he is lying to me also. Therefore, we should be absolutely truthful. We should be absolutely honest. Our nature, our character should be immaculate. Then only people will have confidence, and then we have the potency to distribute this message effectively. If our characters are not exemplary, people will not take us seriously. Now we may be carrying the most important message, but they will not take it seriously because they don't take us seriously. That's why we have to be very, very upright, very straightforward, very honest, very clean. After all, the message is pure. Now, the purity of the message will be conveyed according to our purity. That is, the message is pure, but if we are impure, then the message will become impure. It won't have its effect. Prabhupada gave us four principles, four standards about the mission of our movement. That is, books are the basis. Books means the scriptures. Whatever we speak must be substantiated by the scriptures. We should not imagine or concoct anything. Books are the basis. Then preaching is the essence. The essence is preaching. What is in the books, what we learned, what we understood, the knowledge of the spiritual reality must be distributed. Preaching is the essence. Purity is the force. It is with the force of our purity that we'll be able to preach. If we are not pure, our preaching won't have any effect. So we have to become very pure. So purity, more pure we are, more effective will be our ability to convey, ability to communicate. Purity is the force. And utility is the principle. In order to accomplish our mission, whatever is necessary, let's do that. Let us not stick to just some orthodox stereotype process. Let's be innovative. If it is necessary, let's do something. Like there was a time when the spiritual message was retained only in Sanskrit language. Then some dynamic preachers, they decided to translate these books into the local languages for common people's understanding. I'm talking about some 300 years back, as early as only 300 years back. And there was a huge uproar from the scholarly community. Why you are presenting it in a common language? Why you are, this should be kept only in Sanskrit? But they consider people are not able to understand Sanskrit. So that is the meaning of the utility. Utility is the principle. So, through these practical applications of the effective means that we must establish our activities. So, the informations are there. These are very, very scientific informations. It is not some fairy tales. Like, I'll give you an example. Like, nowadays so many characters are coming up. Superman. First it was Superman. And then Batman, Spider-Man, and all this. Now, they are coming up with all kinds of characters. They have the supernatural power, supernatural quality. But we saw that just in a few years, they're coming and disappearing. In a few years, they're disappearing. Like Superman, now everybody forgotten Superman. When we were young, Superman was the thing. Then came Batman. Then came Spider-Man. Now, is Krishna something like that? Some character that somebody imagined and thought that he is able to do all this activity. No. Like, who is attracted by Superman? Only the children. And when they grow up, then they don't take the Superman so seriously. But who is attracted to Krishna? Since time immemorial, it is the greatest of personalities who have been attracted by Krishna. And speaking about Krishna, like the stalwart acharyas, Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, there are so many such acharyas. The giants of intellectual personality, intellectual giants, they are accepting Krishna. And they are establishing Krishna's identity in the most realistic way, most scientific way. They are not only establishing Krishna's identity, they are establishing the entire spiritual reality in the most scientific way. When Srila Prabhupada was in the MIT, one of the most prestigious technological institutions, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, they showed Prabhupada different departments. Then at the end Prabhupada asked, "Where is the department where you study the difference between a dead body and a living body?" They didn't have any department. "Is there any difference between a dead body and a living body? Like a living body functions in such an amazing way. Why? How? Shouldn't we study that?" So that is where it begins. The beginning point is actually there. What is the difference between dead matter, inert matter, and a living conscious being? What's the difference between this microphone and me? What's the difference between this seat and you? Is there any difference? This table and you? What's the difference? The table is unconscious, whereas you are conscious. The table doesn't have a heart, table doesn't have a kidney, table doesn't have a lung, table doesn't have a brain, table doesn't have blood circulating constantly. The table doesn't have a kidney that is filtering the blood constantly. But you have. Why? Your body is made of matter. Table is also matter. So why there is such a difference? That is the starting point. What is the difference? Then it leads us to the understanding about the soul. The presence of the soul is making the body function in such an amazing way. And then when the soul leaves the body becomes dead. Then that body and the table, there is no difference. That body is inert matter, this table is inert matter. Now, it led us to that point, the soul. Now let us go further. Where is the soul? Where does the soul come from? That will lead us to another reality, the spiritual world. And then, we have informations about the spiritual world. And the center of we all came from the spiritual world. We are not a product of some chemical combination. If it's a product of a chemical combination, then why can't somebody make soul out of chemicals? There's plenty of chemicals, and there are so many laboratories all over the world. So far, has anybody been able to create soul or life out of chemical combination? Never. And we can see that how impossible it will be. Going back to MIT, recently I was in MIT in a program, and I just made a point that life can never be generated out of chemical combination in a laboratory. I said, just consider, not to speak of life, human beings or animals, just take a grain, piece of grain, just a piece of wheat. right? You put it on the ground, what will happen? A tree will come up. And in that tree there will be many weeds. And in each weed there will be a wheat plant. And in each of those plants there will be innumerable weeds. And in each weed there will be a plant. And so forth. Tell me, is it possible to create something like that in a laboratory? So as simple as that. Let's use our common sense. On the other hand, if we just consider there is a soul in this wheat, and that is making the wheat to germinate. The soul, presence of the soul is actually evolving into the body. And the living body can function in such an amazing way because of the presence of the soul. It's a very simple common sense understanding. And that is the real science. The souls and all the souls are coming from the spiritual world. And in the spiritual world there is a supreme soul who is actually the origin of all the souls, and that is the supreme personality of Godhead. Now is it my concocted idea? No. These are the words of the scriptures that is coming down since time immemorial, carried by the most intelligent and wise personalities. So that is the common sense, and we have this, and science actually means common sense, which can be experimentally verified. Thank you very much. Glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any question or comment? Yes?
You mentioned how bona fide authorities are those who don't lie. And we have to be thoroughly honest. However, there is a difference between honesty as a quality and Krishna consciousness, in the sense that sometimes Krishna consciousness actually is beyond even mundane honesty, like, and sometimes a devotee may discard certain qualities like honesty for a higher principle, like we see.
So that means you do that sometimes. Now my answer is, we don't do that, because your image is very important. People must trust you. Therefore, in their eyes, you should not be seen. In their eyes, you shouldn't become dishonest. Okay? Yes? Yeah. Sanam Siddha.
We were part and parcel of this Krishna. We are tiny soul. So, when you follow from the spiritual side, at first we have been entered in which species?
When you go back there, on the way you'll see. You see, there are many, many possibilities. It's not that everybody will come in the same category. Differently, like, all the living entities have the same type of body? There's so many different types of bodies. At the time of creation also we saw that some living entities came from directly from Brahma's mind. Some came out from different aspects of Brahma's body. So in this way, different living entities, according to their subtle body, got their gross body.
We heard that Chalush Kumar cursed for the Jaya Vijay, for take the birth three times in a material world. But again, why they came fourth time as a Jaya Vijay?
Yeah, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes are hidden. That's why that was not announced. Then his pastimes and their identity will become revealed. Yes?
Ramaji, you mentioned that the 12 stages, Vishwadev is one of them. But during Draupadi, when Rupin was being dishonored, he didn't act upright.
That reminds me of one incident when Bhishma Bhishmadev lying on the bed of arrows was giving the advice to Yudhishthira Maharaj. He was before leaving his body, Bhishma gave the instructions to Yudhishthira Maharaj. At that time, Bhishma noticed that there was a trifle smile in the face of Draupadi. Draupadi was smiling. So Bhishma asked Draupadi, why are you smiling? So Draupadi said, where was your wisdom when they were disrobing me in that assembly right in front of you? So Bhishmadev admitted that at that time my consciousness became contaminated because I was eating their food. I was eating Duryodhana's food. But all that contaminated blood now has been drained out of my body. That's why what I am saying, you can trust me. Shekharji, do you have any comment or okay, any other question? It was didn't go to the internet today. Okay. Do you have any more questions, or did I stump you right on that?
No.
Well, I would say, try not to lie.
No, that is. Actually, I have had.
Even for the sake of, sometimes they give the excuse. Oh well, end justifies the means. End justifies the means. There we justifying that well. Sometimes we can lie, but we have to understand. The dharma in this age is standing on one leg. What is that leg?
Truthfulness.
So should we allow that leg also to be broken? No. Honesty, truthfulness is absolute. Yes. क्या हुआ क्या ठीक है अगर तुम सबके सामने अगर बोलना नहीं चाहती हो तो ठीक है बाद में मैं सरल प्रश्न सरल उत्तर ये होगा कि जब भगवान के शरण लिए हो और असुविधा क्या है अगर कुछ मुसीबत है तो भगवान के पास बताओ क्या उनको बोलो तो मैं तो आपका शरण लिया तो आप उनको संभालिए
टू क्वेश्चंस वन क्वेश्चन इज दैट लाइक when we serve Krishna, when we render our services, sometimes it is very difficult to understand whether I am doing this as a service or whether I am doing it as self-aggrandizement. So how do I really assess to what extent I am doing it as a service and to what extent it is?
Whatever needs to be done, just keep doing it. And if there is some tendency for self-aggrandizement, and if you detect it, then pray to Krishna that He frees you from that. Service must be continued.
And just regarding the verses, like daily we memorize verses. Is it that every day, every single verse should be fully memorized, or only the important?
Try at least, keep trying. Like the reason why we repeat is as an effort to memorize. Yes, Arti?
You said that the message is pure. If someone with not so an upstanding character preaches, does that damage our movement or does it in any way affect people's perception of the message we're trying to deliver?
Oh yeah, sure. Say if you're representing somebody and somebody very honorable and people take you according to his dignity, according to his image. Now, if you do something wrong, doesn't it tarnish the image of the person you're representing? Therefore, we should be very, very careful about how we are representing Krishna, how we are representing Srila Prabhupada. Because the layman otherwise will be affected by that. Like somebody may give a very, you know, eloquent presentation, but then the next moment, you know, somebody finds him that he is drunk. Now, will they take him seriously after that? No. The image will be that he is a drunkard. What he speaks is not really important, because he himself doesn't know what he's speaking, what he's talking about.
Arti Mataji's question is actually, taking it a little step further. Like, we see that one needs purity to preach, but if we keep the standard too high, then it's very difficult to understand. Because everyone has their deficiencies to some extent or the other. So how do we actually come to draw the line where, to what minimum extent one should be
at least elevated? Deliberately one should not deviate. One's intention should be pure, right? Because if the intention is not pure, then there is no limit to what extent we may become, we may deviate, we may degrade. At least the honest start off, you know, with that's why I'm pushing this point here. Simply to set a standard. Now just consider, if I tell, okay, for the sake of preaching, everything is all right, you can do this, you can do that, then what will happen? Will anybody be strict about his conduct? No. He'll think, well, I can do anything. I can steal, I can rob, I can murder. You know, because I'm a sadhu, everything goes. First of all, you have to consider what is the meaning of sadhu, how people are looking at us, what's their expectation, what's their understanding. Should I stay up to that expectation, or should I fall from it? If I fall, then what will happen? And as a matter of fact, that's why India's spiritual condition is so bad today. Because the so-called sadhus, their conduct is so undesirable, so abominable sometimes, that people don't take them seriously. They think sadhu means a bunch of useless people, those who don't have any ability to do anything. That's why they accepted this path. Now, should we allow that image to continue, or should we try to improve that image? One class of people have a lot of respect for sadhus, no matter whatever they do. But a vast majority don't have any respect for them because of the way they are acting. How can you have respect for a person who is just smoking ganja all the time? How can you have respect for a person who doesn't do anything, who's just a bum? You know, what commands respect is one's behavior, one's activity. Therefore, we have to be very, very careful how we act, how we behave, how we present ourselves. And that is the beginning. At least the people, those who are around us, they'll have some confidence in us. Nowadays, to most people, the image of a sadhu is who just smoke ganja and charas and doesn't do anything. Trips, all that.
मानव तो मरते हैं और न ही जन्म लेते हैं, तो ये विश्व की जनसंख्या कैसे बढ़ती है?
जनसंख्या किसका बढ़ रहा है?
मनुष्य।
आप काउंट लिया है? आत्मा क्या केवल मनुष्य का ही है, जानवर का है, पंछी का है, चिड़िया का है, कीड़ों के हैं, पेड़ों के हैं, पौधे को है? मनुष्य का संख्या बढ़ रहा है, बल्कि कितना पौधे कितना पेड़ खत्म कर दिया गया है उसका काउंट लिया है? और देखिए बात, असल बात तो ये है कि आत्मा का तो जन्म, आत्मा का उत्पत्ति तो इस दुनिया में नहीं होता है, बहुत आध्यात्मिक जगत से आत्मा आती है। जैसे एक कारागार में कभी कैदी का संख्या बढ़ता है, कभी कैदी का संख्या कम होता है, तो वैसे इस भौतिक जगत में भी कभी कम हो सकता है, कभी बढ़ सकता है। एक समय होगा जब सारे जगत का नाश हो जाएगा, महाप्रलय जब होगा, तब तो एक भी आत्मा यहां नहीं रहेगा, तो क्या होगा उस सबका? सब आध्यात्मिक जगत में अचेतन अवस्था में रहेंगे, ठीक है? यस हरे कृष्ण। बाय बिकमिंग प्योर, जस्ट फॉलो दिस फोर प्रिंसिपल, दैट्स द फाउंडेशन ऑफ प्योरिटी। नो मीट ईटिंग, नो इंटॉक्सिकेशन, नो इलिसिट सेक्स, नो गैम्बलिंग। If you follow these four principles, you'll automatically become pure, right? And you become engaged in service, serving Krishna, right? That is the, what is the meaning of purity? What is pure? Purity means for the substance to be in its original state, right? Like water is water. When something mixes with water, then the water is impure. But water as water is pure. Even if you mix gold with water, then it's impure. Isn't it? So similarly, a living entity, Atma, what is the constitutional position of an Atma? You know that. What's the constitutional position? Servant of Krishna. Right? So when we stop to become servant of Krishna, then only we become impure. Now just when we become situated in the service of Krishna, we are pure. Right? So the way to become pure is by becoming engaged in serving Krishna. And in order to do that, you need some basic criteria, basic qualities, qualifications, that will automatically develop. What's your question?
Sometimes people say that we should not worship Krishna because his character was not good. There are so many affairs, he was dancing with girls. So what should we reply to that?
Well, is Krishna the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Then does everybody belong to Krishna? So if somebody belongs to Krishna and Krishna dances with that person, is there anything wrong in that? If you have a car and if you drive the car, is there anything wrong with that? But if the car doesn't belong to you and you drive the car, then what happens? Then it is wrong. When something doesn't belong to us and if we try to use it or enjoy it, then it is immoral. But when something rightfully belongs to somebody and if he enjoys that, is there anything wrong? Like say for example, that if a married woman becomes attracted to some other man, then it is immoral. Right? But in our society we are seeing so many married women are attracted to Krishna. Is there anything immoral in that? Why not? Why not? Krishna is somebody other than the husband. Then they are attracted to Krishna. Isn't that immoral? Why it's not immoral? Because Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Alright? Now say, you are a young girl. If Krishna says, come and dance with me, how will you feel? Won't you feel that your life has become successful? That your life has achieved its ultimate perfection? That you have an opportunity to dance with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It's not a matter of what we want. It's a matter of what Krishna wants. To be a devotee means not to impose our demands on Krishna, but comply to Krishna's desire. If Krishna says, you serve me in this way, we say, yes, Krishna. If Krishna says, you serve me in that way, we say, yes, Krishna. Okay. Hare Krishna. Okay, I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.